thank you to our sponsors, Digital Magic the Gathering Online Card Specialist, CardHoarder.com, and MTGOTraders.com. And also thank you to our paper magic specialist, GondaPlaid.com, along with Cape Fear Games, an online card store and brick-and-mortar card store. You can find us each week on MTGCast.com, StarCityGames.com, TCGPlayer.com, MyMTGO.com, and MTGSalvation.com.
Hello and welcome everyone to another fantastic episode of Monday Night Magic. It's a little bit different tonight because it's just Tom, so we're back to a one and only solo show, so please keep listening, it'll be okay. So all of you Monday Night Magicians, stay with me, this is going to be a fantastic number 208. We have a ton of news, ton of tournaments, a ton of emails, a ton of good stuff. Let's get right into it. And if anybody's new listening to this show, I am Tom, or Pitimp, P-I-T-I-M-P, at mtgcast.com. We go over news, a little bit of strategy. I'm the casual guy, coming back after doing some big tournaments, because Conley Woods, who a lot of you have heard of and no one has seen on the different deck techs on the main Mothership site, know that he was at Grand Prix Washington, D.C. this past weekend, and then this upcoming weekend he's going to be getting on a plane and flying to Puerto Rico, so let's all cry for poor Conley, who has to go to Puerto Rico to play some Magic. So we'll go through some Magic news, what we've been playing, or actually what I've been playing. We'll be going through all of our listener emails. We'll go through some MTGcast news. And then we'll go through my quick B-movie pick, which I think you're going to enjoy, and this is Critters. So without further ado, we'll go right into this week in Magic news. So the big one, we last week recorded on Sunday night, which most of you that listen probably could tell, because we didn't talk about something that came out on Monday, which is probably the biggest news of the week outside of the tournaments. And this is the announcement of the new multiplayer product coming out in June from Wizards of the Coast, and it's called Arch Enemy. And I have to admit, Colin and I usually talk a lot about food. When I first heard Arch Enemy, this reminded me of the Arch Deluxe. If anybody's aware of the Arch Deluxe, it is an amazing sandwich that was available at McDonald's quite a while ago. And this was supposed to be the adult taste for the adult fast food consumer market from McDonald's, and really, it flopped horribly. The amazing, they used to have this awesome little infomercial and diagram about what went into this. They talk about a soft, buttery, homestyle bakery bun. It's a hamburger. That's what it was. It was supposed to be this amazing adult hamburger, but it was still a hamburger. Around the same time, if any of you are McDonald connoisseurs of history as I am, this was around the same time as the McDLT, the hot side hot and the cold side cold, which to me is still an amazing innovation, which I'm not sure why they haven't brought back. But that's what I thought of when I heard about Arch Enemy. But this actually looks like to be a really interesting new way to play multiplayer Magic. In a lot of ways, it's going to remind you of Plane Chase. It's coming out in 4 game packs. This will be release events will be June 18th through 20th. There'll be 4 game packs, and these are going to be $19.99, not the originally announced $24.99. And this includes a 60-card deck and also a 20-card scheme deck. And we'll talk a little bit more about what scheme decks and what the scheme cards are. They're going to be oversized, and from the pictures look to be similar size to the Plane Chase playing cards. And in total, there'll be 45 unique scheme cards for you to get out of the 4 packs. So clearly there's going to be some doubles in these. A couple weeks ago, we actually had the product images, we had the product images released this week, and a couple weeks ago, we actually had the product themes. I pulled up both, and I was able to match those together for you and try to guess what the colors are for each of the Arch Enemy decks. Presumably because the art that's on the front of the box matches the full page art, I guess not full page, but full res art that they showed a couple weeks ago. The black-red deck appears to be the, quote, Bring About the Undead Apocalypse deck. We have white, blue, black for the Assemble the Doomsday Machine deck, which I assume is going to be the coolest one. I don't know how you argue with that. We have green, white for Trample Civilization Underfoot, and we have red, green for Scorch the World with Dragonfire. As you can guess, Arch Enemy in a lot of ways can be similar to your kitchen table Magic. You're going to have at least a 60-card deck. You can play with the ones provided in the game packs. You can make your own 60-card deck, be it Standard, Legacy, EDH, you know, whatever you want to do, 60 or more cards. And then your Arch Enemy is also going to have an additional deck called the Scheme Deck. This will have at least 20 of these oversized Scheme cards. And this is going to be shuffled and put, you know, face down, just like you would your normal Magic deck. The couple other differences is in the Scheme Deck, you can only have 2 at max of any one Scheme card. So that's a little different than the 4 of or 1 of. This is 2 max of any Scheme card in your 20-plus Scheme deck. The Arch Enemy is going to be starting with 40 life. All the other players are starting with 20 life. and the archenemy also goes first and draws a card. So I think the way they're really pitching this, they're going to have different ways to play Archmage, but the way I think is the classic way to play is that most people will be using this. You're going to have one person playing the Archmage, so one person has the scheme deck, starting with 40 life, is going first, drawing a card. Then you're going to have probably anywhere from 2 to 4 or 5, they would call them hero players. So people are trying to defeat the archenemy. Because me, I'm going to be the archenemy because who doesn't? This is like being Val Kilmer or MacGruber. You want to be the cool bad guy. I'm the archenemy, and my goal is I want to knock out all the other hero players. The hero players, is their goal is just to have me be dead. So as long as there's one of them left standing and I'm dead, the way they word this on the official press release is that everybody wins. So in my mind, this is sort of hinting that this is going to be used in some sort of release format, or potentially used in more of a competitive format like we're seeing EDH used, and we do still have plane chase tournaments. So even if you're the last player in and you knock out that archenemy, your whole team is considered as winning the game. So me and the archenemy, I'm at my 40 life, I got my 7 card hand, I get to go first because that's just how bad I am, and I also get to draw a card. And the other players, this is kind of played in two-headed giant style. After I take my turn, the hero players, however many of them are, they take their turn simultaneously. So there's one untap step, one draw step, one upkeep step, one main phase. They can't share creatures, they can't share mana, but then they all attack as one. The little different thing is happening on my turn with the archenemy. And the way this says is the addition to the main phase on my archenemy main phase. As the first main phase of the archenemy turns begins, that player, the archenemy, sets a scheme in motion. So yes, that's an actual game action, is to put a scheme in motion by turning over the top card of the scheme deck face up. There are going to be two types of schemes, and click on the show note to look a little bit more into this. We have our sort of one-time shot schemes that just call it scheme, and the other ones that say ongoing scheme. And they stay in play, we'll talk about that in a little bit, they're not actually in play, they're going to stay in effect until the hero players hit some sort of trigger or get some sort of effect, like, hey, they did so many damage, or they destroyed the creature that I reanimated. All these different ways where they have to meet this effect in order to get rid of that ongoing scheme. And the interesting thing is that the schemes are not on the battlefield, they are not permanents, and they can't be destroyed or sacrificed, so they're just kind of there. The one thing that me as the archenemy and you as a hero players can do is you can respond to that like you could any other ability or effect. And once the schemes are used, they actually go back onto the bottom of the scheme deck, so this thing's going to kind of keep recycling. I don't know about everybody listening, but this seems like a pretty cool way to play Magic. I dabbled for a slight bit of time in the World of Warcraft CCG, which I don't know if anybody follows this. Apparently Upper Deck lost the license to do the World of Warcraft CCG due to a bunch of financial and shenanigans, and now another company has picked it up. If you are a player of this, this is a Magic show, but I'm just curious, is on the back of the cards World of Warcraft, there's a big old Upper Deck logo. If it's not being made by a different company, I am curious to see how they're going to reconcile the existing cards that have an Upper Deck symbol on the back and the new cards, which I assume won't have that. But that's besides the point. Is that in the World of Warcraft CCG, they had a different way of playing called Raid Decks. I dabbled in World of Warcraft for maybe 3-4 months. I had a human. He was a Dark Priest. So he had a Dark Priest. His name was Peyronie's. If anybody out there knows what Peyronie's is, you'll understand the irony of that one. And I had a good time with the game. I never got to the high levels where people do these crazy raids where you have 60, 40, 60 people, whatever it is, to go defeat some crazy boss. The raid decks in the World of Warcraft game were like that. You had some sort of player or monster boss that all the other players had then to defeat, and they would get special cards and things like that. Archenemy really feels like that flavor applied to Magic. But it's still giving you the flavor of, in some ways, you're a planeswalker or a super archenemy planeswalker, and all the other players are your normal planeswalkers, and they're trying to defeat me to get my goodies. And they also list on the official press release some other ways to play with archenemy where every single person is the archenemy. And this will make it a little bit interesting. If you take a look through the schemes that have been spoiled so far, we have 4 of the 45. Some of these have this one way of choosing, like, one or the other. So basically, you can either have it affect you, or you pick one of the hero players to be affected. I'm pulling up one of these so I can give you the exact wording of this. It's called self or others. That's the keyword ability for these schemes. So the example that I'll read through and how this gets interesting is, may civilization collapse. Just a one-shot scheme. When you set the scheme in motion, and that just, you can't say that and not smile. That is just a cool thing to say during a game of Magic. Target opponent chooses self or others. So I'm the archenemy, so this is targeting the team. So I pick one of the hero players, and they must now have to make this choice of self or others. If that targeted player that I picked chooses themselves, he or she sacrifices two lands. But they got an out. If that player chooses others, they themselves don't do anything. All the other players have to sacrifice a land. So in a classic, I want to call the basic archenemy game, this is an interesting choice where depending if I'm targeting a player that's the strongest on board, the most likely to kill me, it may be in the team's best interest for them to discuss and say, hey, dude, pick others. You're going to kill the archenemy. You need to keep going. Go for it. But if you're playing this variant where everybody's an archenemy, if you get one of these, that's gravy. Because when you pick others, it affects everybody else. It just doesn't affect you. So I could see how if you have a lot of these self or others, that could make for an interesting all archenemy games. The other ones that we have seen so far is we also have Which of You Burns Brightest, a one-shot scheme. When you set the scheme in motion, you may pay X colorless mana. If you do, this scheme deals X damage to target opponent and each creature he or she controls. So you're starting to get a flavor of how strong some of these schemes are. And these are going to be triggering every turn for the archenemy, so they're going to be tough to defeat. They have a lot of tools to take out the opponents. Next, we have My Undead Horde Awakens. This is an ongoing scheme. So this gets face up until it's abandoned, and that's the key word where if they meet the condition, it gets abandoned. At the beginning of your end step, you may put target creature card from opponent's graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. When a creature put onto the battlefield with a scheme is put into a graveyard, abandon this scheme. So pretty cool to get ongoing recursion of creatures. And last but not least, we have All in Good Time. And this one looks like it's right out of the Assemble the Doomsday Machine deck, because it has a, trying to think what you want to call it, there's a bunch of gears seem to be kind of floating in the ether. There's a time glass, a sand glass kind of running down. Looks great. One-shot scheme, when you set the scheme in motion, take an extra turn after this one. Schemes don't get set in motion that extra turn. But still, you're getting an extra turn. That's pretty strong. So keep an eye out. June 18th, game packs will be $20. You get everything you need in one game pack to be the archenemy. All the other people playing in archenemy don't need to have this. So there's really a fairly minimal investment, a lot like Plane Chase. If you had to ask me which one excites me more in general, if Plane Chase versus Arch Enemy, I'm going to have to pick Arch Enemy. Plane Chase was just stupidly fun sometimes. A lot of times it was almost degenerate where stuff would change so fast by how the planes would get flipped over, which could be cool, but sometimes could be a little frustrating for me. It also, in some ways, a little bit unstructured, which is good and bad. I like Arch Enemy. Is it's a way, again, introduce newer players. You could have them be the archenemy so they're tougher, but it's also more complicated, or you can have them be a team of hero players, and as they're trying to battle you, it would be a really good way to teach the game to them, to multiple people at one time. Again, you know, go check this out. It's always cool to have more ways to play Magic. You kind of like to have these neat oversized cards that have these different abilities, and there's inventive people out there that are going to find other ways to use these cards to have their own Magic variants. Whew. Tip your head back. That was a long one. Winded. All right, so next we have Mark Rosewaters, and this is we've all heard of this, is the Timmy, Johnny, and Spike way of looking at Magic players and what they like, what they don't like, what they're going to gravitate towards. I didn't realize that Mark Rosewater actually had kind of a trademark name to go with this. It's called Magic Psychographics, and there's this really interesting blog article on Giant's Bridge about how you can apply this same psychographic analysis to Wizards of the Coast's other games, such as Dungeons & Dragons. They go through how Timmy, who's the casual player, Johnny is the combo lover, and Spike is the competitive-minded tournament player. And there's also kind of the unofficial fourth of Vorthos, which is really into the, art and flavor and kind of the fantasy aspects of the game. And all these psychographic roles exist in D&D. And they also say there's, again, in D&D, there's a pseudo-fourth member of the class called Melvin, who's in the thing for the picture. So Melvin, I can see, as being the D&D version of the Vorthos for Magic the Gathering. They also go through how this may not work exactly very well for D&D and how you can adapt this to other games, but it's an interesting way to think about Magic from a design perspective and how you can make the game fun and appealing to all different types of players. So if you're a company making a collectible card game, you want that to be a good game, a popular game, accessible by as many people as possible so you can sell as much of it as you can to keep everybody paid and keep the game alive. We also have, you know, the warm fuzzies go out to our judges everywhere. I don't play in a ton of tourneys, but judges keep the tourneys going. You would not be playing at GPs or Pro Tours or PTQs if you didn't have judges there to keep things from just devolving into chaos. Because the next time you go to a Magic tournament, my goal to you is, as soon as they say this round starts, start counting in seconds until the first person yells judge. I can almost guarantee it'll be less than a minute every time. A lot of times it is really less than about 30 seconds. You're not sure how anything could have happened in that short period of time. All of a sudden you hear, judge, judge. And you have to realize the judges are there to keep that tournament going and to make sure that the gameplay is fair and catch, you know, poke them like cheating and other things. So Magic, they realize this. They've been giving things like promos and other things to kind of keep it going. But now they're actually doing this interesting Mojo program. This is the Magic Online Judge Open. This is a free Magic Online sealed deck tournament. Rise of the Eldrazi will be the packs, open to all certified judges around the world. So again, we've had some feedback from a lot of international listeners that it seems like for a while Wizards was a little North American centric in their giveaways, like specifically in the United States of America. But now they're even opening up this to certified judges out throughout the world, and they realize that there's going to be a variety of time zones, and they want as many judges to play as they can. So they're actually going to have two different tournaments over consecutive weekends. Every judge is invited to the first one. If you didn't play in the first one, you are then eligible to play in the second one. They just don't want people playing in both. The tournaments will be June 26th from 7 a.m. GMT to 7 p.m. And then we'll have July 2nd from 5 p.m. GMT to, it just says -7 U.S. West Coast. I'm not sure exactly what that means. They say if you're going to play in this, please triple check the time for where you live, because if anybody realizes, converting time zone is not an easy feat. Some of the goals of the Magic Online Judge Open, they're going to say thank you. They want to give a day of magic. I like how they put this. They want to give a day of magic where you don't have to worry about giving or even getting a single penalty, which I like. And to give you a chance to spend some quality time with your peers and make some new friends from around the globe. There's also going to be prizes. Besides the cards you're opening in the packs, every single player that participates is getting an alternate art promo Scent of Cinder. And if anybody, a Scent of Cinder is kind of an old card that I haven't seen for a while. And of course, you can probably hear me typing this in because I want to make sure I tell you the exact right text on this one. So this is one of our ones from Urza's Destiny. Scent of Cinder, it's a sorcery, one red and a colorless. Reveal any number of red cards from your hand. Scent of Cinder deals X damage to target creature or player, where X is the number of cards revealed this way. And this will be alternate arts, and apparently this alternate art promo is not going to be available to everybody else on MTGO until April of 2011. So again, they're giving people really an exclusive sneak peek of this card. In some ways, if people are really antsy, it's a way of giving them just straight up cash, because this will be a card that no one else can have except for these judges that play in this tournament. People love promos. So they are going to be going to get this like mad. If you go to any sort of PTQ, GPPT, when the judges are getting those promos, those first few days, those things are always crazy expensive, well over $100 usually. And the one thing I thought that was interesting is that everybody gets the Scent of Cinder, all the judges that play. The winner of each tournament will either be awarded travel sponsorship to judge any pro tour or worlds of their choice within the next calendar year, or six packs. To me, that's a pretty big difference between six packs, so we're talking $24 U.S. dollars, roughly MSRP, versus what I'm guessing could be hundreds and hundreds of dollars to have you get your potentially small or large self put on a plane and sent to some exotic locale. So I thought it was a little interesting that I thought maybe you get like a set or a booster box, especially when this is digital MTGO cards, where I know they have to respect and maintain a healthy economy, but in some ways it really doesn't cost that much to give you some digital cards. So I thought that was interesting. There's a little bit of a mismatch between the prizes. Next, we heard about this, I think a couple of months ago, is that the Star City Games, we were talking about the overall death of print Magic magazines, which hand holds right along with the death of a lot of print magazines for everything else, is that the Star City Games had announced about this thing called the Gazette. And this is what sounds like a one-time print publication that's going to be available, or was available this past weekend at Grand Prix Washington, D.C. It was print. It had all new articles by the Star City Games premium columnist. This is Patrick Chapin. He's on the cover. Brian Kibler, Craig Wesco, Cedric Phillips, Gary Thompson, Kyle Bogems, Sam Black, Stefan Menendian, Ben Blyweiss, and a lot more. And they said it was free, and it also had coupons in it you could redeem at the Star City Games booth now or at a couple of future tournaments. So I thought that's pretty cool. I do a lot of stuff online. I still love print magazines. I get print computer magazines. I get print video game magazines. I would be getting a print Magic magazine if one really still existed. And of course, this past weekend, we had Grand Prix Washington, D.C. And this thing, you know, dropped out of the sky like the Hulk and just destroyed all other records for attendance for GPs in the North America. 1,931 players jammed into this tournament. And we want to say congratulations to the winner in the end. I can't even, they call it the grinders. I can't even comprehend grinding through that many people. But Brad Nelson playing Blue White Control is crowned the winner. I'll have a link in the show notes to the general coverage and also a link to the top 8 deck lists. I think for a lot of tourney players or PTQ players, that's the first thing they go to see is what won, what was doing well. And yeah, okay, I'm playing Blue White Control. The top 8, we had 4 Blue White Control. So that shows you that Blue White Control doing pretty well right now. And Conley will be back after Pro Tour San Juan here. But I'll have him talk a little bit more about why Blue White Control has really shot up to the top. In a lot of ways, Wall of Omens has been a key thing where it really helps slow down Jund enough so that Control player can get established, start using their massive numbers of board sweepers. We have Marshall Coup, they have Judgment, they have their crazy card advantage from their Planeswalkers. It lets them survive long enough so they can just dominate the game. But of course, we had three Jund, and we also had 1 Bant. And this is some new, not-so-new tech that's come out. And I can't help but smile when I think of Sovereigns of Lost Alara sitting on the table. One of your creatures attacks on its own. You search out an enchantment or an aura. And of course, we now have this monster Eldrazi Conscription. And for everybody, this is my challenge, and it's amazing how many times people get this wrong, is for the Eldrazi Conscription, is what does it give the enchanted creature? I think a lot of people in their minds, they think it costs 10 and gives a +8/+8. It is the flip-flop. Eldrazi Conscription, it costs 8 to put out, but it gives it a +10/+10 Trample and Annihilator 2, which is insane. It is a monster card and very cool. Let's see, and kind of looking through the other kind of top 8 deck lists, is the other cool thing is to see Vengevine making a huge appearance in a lot of the Jund decks, along with Sarkhan the Mad, and I feel that he had gotten really maligned, and he is not a bad card. And now we're seeing that Sarkhan the Mad 1 to 2 of us was showing up in a lot of the Jund decks. Vengevine is there, and it's hard not to smile when you think about, you know, the blue-white control player is just Wrath the board, the Jund player plays a Broadblade Elf, this cascades into another creature, and then boom, you now have 2 creature spells being played in the turn, you're now getting a Vengevine out, and you are back in the game for really casting 1 creature. And kind of going along with this is not directly related, but National Qualifiers, which we've had tons of them all over the world, is TCG Player had a very nice, now has a nice database of all of the top 8 deck lists from pretty much every single national qualifiers that I can think of when I look through this list. So if you want to look through 50 plus decks that won first place at a national qualifiers, here you can do it. If you want to see the top second, you know, top 2, third, fourth, fifth place, you can go do it. I took a quick browse through the first place decks and a couple jumped out. We had a lot of Jund, Blue White Control, Bant with the Eldrazi Conscription, but over in, let's see, the California qualifier, we had this pretty budget-friendly black-red aggro deck took first, and then an even more budget-friendly mono-black vampires deck took first in Arizona, which I thought was pretty interesting. So, hurrah for the budget deck. I know if you are going out to be a professional Magic player and want to be placing first tournaments, you should be using lots of card choices, but it's nice to see a deck that may be more affordable for players to get into it doing so well. And related to this is I wanted to say congratulations to Russell Tassaker for getting a top 8 in the Australian National Qualifiers and did a very nice write-up over on Mana Nation. The link is in the show notes. We're going to be missing, but also cheering on Conley in the upcoming Pro Tour San Juan, May 28th to May 30th. You know, to follow along all the coverage, that's going to be an amazing weekend. We have a few other people that we know that are going there, so you know, if you know somebody at Pro Tour San Juan, cheer them on. I can't really imagine playing in a Pro Tour. I've talked with Conley about it. You know, that's just not where I'm at for Magic. I have never been there. Most likely will never be there, so I have to live vicariously through him. We have the Magic 2011 booster box and packs, images. I don't know if you can go look through that. It's kind of like playing Where's Waldo, the Magic Pen. You see this little piece of art, you have to try to guess where it's from. It could even be a new card. That's one of the things that makes seeing the booster images of the base set a little bit less fun, is before you knew it had to be a card that existed before. So that was the big hunt. Now it could be a new card, and you may just not be able to guess it because it hasn't existed in the past. And the promo giveaway appears to be Birds of Paradise. I can't give you a formal confirmation on that, but that is the rumors going around. And last but not least, is it always interests me when on the Mothership site they give us new ways to play Magic. And on today, Monday, May 24th, by David Noonan, there is a new variant that they go through called Frontier Magic. This is a one-on-one, so mano-a-mano way of playing Magic. In a lot of ways, you're playing the same sorts of decks that you normally play, but instead of just playing lands out and casting spells, you're actually laying the lands out in this 5x grid, and then that's sort of your, this is territory. And there's these very specific rules on how you play creatures. They go onto land, they can explore that land, because initially all the lands are laid down face down, so you really can't play a whole lot, but then you have to search out, discover those lands, and you can only use those lands if you have a creature nearby. So it's an interesting way to play Magic. Check it out. Definitely gives more of a tactical feeling to it, almost like a real-time strategy. Take a look. I won't read through you every single blurb of this, but it sounds like kind of a cool way to play if we have a Friday Night Magic playgroup, casual playgroup. Maybe give this a try to sort of get a little bit more bang out of your buck for like budget decks. And that is our Magic news. We had quite a bit. When one person can talk to themselves for almost 27, 28 minutes, you know that's a ton of Magic news. Hopefully you're not bored with me yet. You know, after 204 some episodes, hopefully you'll hang with me there. But that's what we had for Magic news. Hopefully we'll have Marcel, Jack, Eric, Kyle will be back the week after that. But for right now, we got what you've been playing. Of course, I'm talking to myself, so it's what I've been playing, and luckily I know the answer to that. So Marcel and I continue to have fun with the blue-red Kiln Fiend deck for Standard. I obviously know this is not a Tier 1 deck, but I'm going to stick my man junk out there and say this is a Tier 2 deck. Marcel has a nice deck list on the comments for Episode 207, so right now he's using things like Plated Geopede. We still have the Surikar spell, Spellblade in there. He's been trying out the Coral Helm Commander. And then, of course, we have the love of my life, the Kiln Fiend, the one that gets massively huge whenever you're playing instant and sorcery spells. We have a couple of listener emails for a couple of other card choices, but so far this has been a fun deck. It's competitive, it's aggro in nature, there you got a little bit of control in there, and it's more of the surprise factor, and you just feel good when you have a 1-3 Kiln Fiend. We've talked about this before. I am playing a Distortion Strike, so now it's a 4-3 up to a 5-3. They then try to, you know, say Lightning Bolted or Doomblade it. I then counter that with a Negate, and now my guy's up to, you know, an 8-3. Unblockable, and he'll be attacking the next turn again. It's just a fun deck to play. Kiln Fiend was a monster in the pre-release for me, and now he's being a monster in Standard. So if you want a new FNM deck, check out Blue-Red Kiln Fiend. I think you'll have a good time. And see, and they also have some other news. Every once in a while when you're browsing on Yahoo, that pops up the news right on the front page, and you just have to click on it. Whenever they say, hey, we have like weird exotic animals and like animal myth legends coming true, I'm sorry, I'm going to click on that link. I don't care if I'm delivering a baby, incising, I don't care, I'm going to go click on that link right now. And this is something where if you've been following this, is we're constantly discovering new species of animals. They'll go into like Borneo and go down into a rotted out volcano where the animals can never get out, so they've evolved separately, or they're in the woods of the Foya Mountains of Indonesia. But every once in a while you see these creatures, and they look just like a creature on a Magic card. So I'm going to give you my 2 to 3 picks that I have seen recently on Yahoo. First, this just came out, I believe yesterday, is the Pinocchio Frog. And it's hard not to look at this little frog and think it's cute, because it looks like it has like a little downward pointing elephant nose on a frog. This is from Indonesia, and if you really want to get down and dirty with this, go into magiccards.info and search up Noxious Toad from Portal, and they look surprisingly alike. So Pinocchio Frog is a real-life form of Noxious Toad. The other one, a little bit more standard relevant for all of you standard players, especially if you're playing Bant, is we have the Dendrolophus copsteini. This is a new snake that's been discovered, and this was actually discovered, I believe, in Borneo. It's a flame-colored snake, and when you look at it, it goes from green to red, to brown, to blue, to green, and it looks like a lotus cobra. It can actually flare its nape, so it actually gets big like a lotus cobra, and demonstrates all 5 colors of Magic. I got excited to see a real-life lotus cobra. And third but not least, I may have seen Deathless Angel shopping at Lane Bryant at Rosedale Mall, but that one I cannot confirm. And listener emails, we love to get them. You can email, you know, any of my co-hosts, Marcel at mtgcast.com, Jack at mtgcast.com, Eric with a C at mtgcast.com. Conley, C-O-N-L-E-Y, at mtgcast.com. If you really want to have your, you know, debate complete for him to come back, Gavin, G-A-V-I-N, at mtgcast.com. And I am begging for emails at pitimp@mtgcast.com. Mike B, he recommends checking out Swerve and the Blue-Red Killmeen deck. Seems like a pretty good choice. You're going to have the mana available. Casey from Penn State likes the new Mox Pearl art. He also wants to get some feedback from you, the listeners, where if he thinks it's a good deal for him to trade a Gideon Jura for a Jace the Mind Sculptor. I emailed back that if you're solely looking at monetary value, the answer is yes. Last I looked, Gideons are still about $50. Jace Mind Sculptor are about $75. If you're looking at solely at money-wise, go for it. And a lot of the decks that you're seeing around for Blue Light Control, they're playing both. So, depending if you have more Gideons than Jaces, you know, go for it. See, Pedro from Germany thinks that being a co-host would be fun and is a fan of the show. Thank you, Pedro. I need a little bit of ego stroking every week. Wolfgang likes the original coat of arms art. Nadav writes in, and this is something I can't answer yet. He wants to know if Conley will be going to Pro Tour Amsterdam. And if he is, he has a very special $20 bill with his name on it. If you don't know what we're talking about, go back maybe about a month or so, and you'll see a very disturbing picture of Conley and what he would do for $20. Anthony from Idaho, he deserves your magic hate because he says he bought his Jace Mind Sculptors at $20, pulled three, and then had a foil one by the end of his release event. He traded the foil for another Jace, and he has a total of 9 Jace the Mind Sculptors. He also bought his Tarmogoyfs for $5 a piece and a foil one for $6. So if you need somebody to put on your magic card pricing trading voodoo doll, Anthony, there you go. Jonas S., this is a link in the show notes, was on the Twitter feed. We joked that Eric from St. Louis is sort of the den mother, the MTG cast mother nature of the show, and he made a very interesting Goblin Matron remake of the art, but with Eric's face on it. So that was very, very disturbing. Somebody named me that one guy wrote in about our talk about intentional draws last time, saying that the national qualifiers in Wyoming ended in an intentional draw because two people from the same store ended up playing for the top spot. They had a 3-hour drive back, so they decided just to do an intentional draw. And it was only around, around 4, I'm not sure if that's 4 a.m. or not. And he says, in his local areas, most of the top players will take intentional draws. And we'll have a few more emails, but that is definitely overall the feedback that I got, that most people say intentional draws are kind of a necessary evil, but it can be a little frustrating. Continuing on, we have Stuart. He writes in that he likes to torment his local EDH group with a lot of textless cards, and then can just make up what these things do. And he also sent in a B-movie recommendation that looks absolutely fascinating to me. This is a movie called Mafia versus Ninja. Already I want to see this movie. And it says, the mob has finally met its match, and I think it's been dubbed. He sent me the Amazon link page. Every once in a while on Amazon, you'll see people that like to go through and put very, I call them, just hysterical reviews of things. And there is a couple of just phenomenal ones on this one. The best one I could see was, this film delivers a colorful and intimately close look at the multicultural struggle to control the drug trade in Shanghai. I look to this film frequently to help me through life's challenges. The power and emotion illustrated by the creators of this timeless masterpiece give my life a purpose. It also changed the way I look at steak knives, gambling, organizations, fruit baskets, banner leaders, heroin, bamboo trees, friendship, love, loyalty, and the theme for Battlestar Galactica. So, Mafia vs. Ninja is now on my list. If I'll ever be able to find it, that's another question. Because, well, I guess I can buy one used for $1.84 off of Amazon for VHS. So there we go. James F. is writing in for, again, you the listeners. Do you feel that Friday Night Magic is a viable place to test a deck in the competitive setting? Why or why not? I'm going to try to channel Conley as much as I can. I think you would probably say this depends on your local kind of metagame or FNM. I've heard pretty mixed stories from like Jack, who initially his FNM group was very, very casual. You could really bring whatever deck you want, whatever fun deck you're playing, and have an average chance of doing okay. Then some new players showed up that really used this as much more of a competitive outlet, and they felt this became much less fun. They didn't like that. So if that was more of your local FNM scene, where it's more of a casual viewpoint of playing wacky decks, may not be as good of a way to play to test a competitive deck. But if you're in maybe more of a larger city FNM area, where I'm guessing you have more players, more serious players that are bringing decks that they want to see how they do against an average metagame, I would have to say yes, FNMs don't seem like a bad place to go. Just scope out the different stores in your area if you have more than one, see what it's like, and that'll tell you what to say. Let's see, Brendan, he sent in this interesting art project that I honestly don't quite understand. It is a comic set to the tune of, quote, On the Rise from Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, and has a summary of the events leading to and around the Rise of the Eldrazi is sung by Jace and Chandra. All the images were taken from the comics on Wizards.com. A link is in the show notes. Check it out. I can't explain it any better than what I just did right there. Will writes in, he has greatly enjoyed the Phyrexia versus the Coalition dual deck. This one feels like it just kind of came out and disappeared. Maybe because it was surrounded right around the time where they revised their new reprint policy where people just really signed off on any future dual decks as they won't be getting interesting cards in them. But again, he said it was quite fun. It looked like an interesting deck, and I had not thought about it since then. And you also want to point out that the new art for Yavimael Elder looks a lot like Sir Ian McKellen. And yes, it does. John sent in a fun game where he had 6/6 oozes off of a turn 4 Lightning Genesis due to just overall abuse and good draws of Overgrown Battlements. So congratulations. Brian writes in for our borderline PC question of the week, is saying, in my quest to find a magic shirt, I stumbled upon a shirt that said, quote, the tap symbol, so tap that ass, get brown mana. Anyway, I chuckled, but not enough to purchase it, which was probably good. He wants to know if I or anybody else can recommend a good place that sells magic shirts with card art on them. My guess is if they have card art, that would have to be coming through the official Wizards of the Coast site. Because I think if I were to just take some art, I know I've done this illegally, take some art, print it out and put it on a shirt and sell it, I think that's illegal because I'm violating copyright law. If you know a good place to buy magic art shirts, please let me know and I'll share it for all the listeners. Tosis writes in, again, for a question for you. He wants to get a magic-themed tattoo. Do you have any ideas? You could refer back to Brian's email about the tap symbol one, but hopefully you'd go for something that's a little less risque. Let's see. Peter writes in. He wanted to give me more information. Last time I sort of mocked the Pratt & Whitney Aircraft Club that was mentioned for one of the upcoming tournaments. He said the club is actually a recreational center for Pratt & Whitney employees and retirees and can be rented for functions. It has a gymnasium like you'd find in a typical high school gym and has a stage for plays and assemblies. He says it would make a very spacious site for an upcoming PTQ like it is, and it's right near the highway with good parking. And he says when big money is on the line for your time about intentional draws, he says people want to play it safe, and that Magic is a game of skill, but there is still that luck component that you can't get rid of. And he says you can't blame people who want to try to normalize that luck coefficient as much as they can and get the prize when they need to. He also said, we talked about Dave Williams skipping the World Series of Poker, is that I didn't know that the World Series of Poker is actually 40-plus events that overlap over a couple of months. So he's pretty sure that Williams isn't skipping the main event, but he's probably skipping some of the side events in order to go to the Pro Tour. So, again, making Magic more public, go for it. Dominic S. writes in that he likes the show, would like to see a co-host contest, and also says that he's been an on-air pastry chef. And he also sent a very snazzy picture of a shiven, or a shiven, whatever, whichever way you say it. I know half of you are screaming at your radio right now. The shiven dragon cake. He also wants to find the art for Meditate for his wall, since he says the artist depiction of Urtai looks exactly like the person himself. So, but it's not available for sale anywhere, so you have to go hunt for it. You know, find this in a, you know, abandoned bin. You have to go to France. You know, go through a flea market. If anybody watches Antiques Roadshow, my personal favorite one I have ever seen on that show, is somebody brought in this little painting of the Titanic. It was maybe about the size of a mouse pad, maybe 8 inches by 6 inches or 4 inches. Terrible painting. It was butt ugly in an ugly frame. You're looking at this, you're like, unless this is written, made by Picasso, how is this worth anything more than like the $2 this guy spent for it? But unfortunately, the interesting thing was not actually the paintings. You flipped the wooden frame over on the back, pasted to it was a menu from the day that the Titanic sank. If anybody's in the Titanic history, is every day they actually had a printing press. They would print out the menus for that day. It was a very fancy menu. The reason I liked Titanic history is it sank on my birthday. So it's kind of hard not to be interested in the day of April 14th. So this is apparently the only known existing copy of the actual menu from the day the Titanic sank. How it made it to the mainland and intact, it didn't appear to be wet and wrinkly, is unknown, but it was worth, I think, tens if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. It was insane. Not sure how we got there with that discussion, but that's where we are. So next email. William B., he asked for the name of my movie podcast I do with a group of guys and some girls here in town, and also sent me a B-movie starring Sean Connery called Zardoz, and this very disturbing photo of Sean Connery from that movie. Kind of looks like Borat when he's wearing the mankini, the banana hammock. That's what it looks like. If anybody's really interested in checking out the movie podcast, it's a little more on the adult-oriented side. We'll say there's a little bit more cursing and innuendo. It's pgpfilmcast.com. You can go check it out. You can listen to the shows. I think we're up to episode 42 or 43 now. Let's see. Lincoln from Ottawa. He sends in a picture of a Beckett Magic the Gathering magazine. I believe this is probably... Beckett is known for releasing price guides for about pretty much anything that will stand still long enough to put a price on it. And I think this is their Magic version. What I don't know is if this has articles in it or anything else, it might actually be a decent magazine. Jesse D. would pick the art for the Drownu Lich Lord by Greg Staples, along with the From the Vault art for Niccolo Bolas, and some of the preview art for Scars of Mirrodin to hang on his wall. Nick S. would love to have the Vampire Nighthawk art on his wall. And Drew G. sends in a B-movie recommendation for a movie called City Hunter. It's apparently an old dub Jackie Chan movie. This is where a guy can throw playing cards into people's skulls. Every scene is drawn out by a corny theme tune that plays far too often. It also has this famous fight scene where for about 3 minutes the movie turns into a Street Fighter parody, where Jackie Chan fights dressed as Chung Li. Sounds are taken from the actual game and used in the movie. It sounds very illegal, but apparently that's what they did for Jackie Chan. That is the end of our emails. You survived. I appreciate it. We're going to talk about a way for you to win some cards in the end, so hang in there. MTG Cast News. Say the biggest one for this week is, kind of had this sort of joking rivalry of TCG Player. As we talked on the phone, things are ironed out. Things are all kosher now. They're all cool. Monday Night Magic will be reappearing on TCG Player every week. And as Conley has mentioned over the last couple weeks, is they've gotten Mike Flores. They really have beefed up the Magic portion of their coverage now. So we're going to be back on there. No hard feelings. Just want to give a shout out to them. Also, we're continuing the contest. We'll leave it open for this week and then next week. So this is episode 208. So next week it's open. We'll be 209. It'll be open. So episode 210, it's actually going to close. So if you don't have your entry in by 210, it's going to close, and I will announce the winners on episode 210. And, of course, the prize is to win one of two Gideon Juras. Depending on the entries, I may be throwing in some more prizes, but for sure we have two Gideon Juras fresh from an online retailer. I'll say the name, MTG Fanatic. They're in my hot little hand right now because I'm glad I ordered them because basically all the places are selling out right now. So two Gideons, they're going to wing their way to you. All you need to do to win is send me a picture of your Magic collection. Again, we're going to try to make it interesting. Of your Magic collection or where you play Magic. Go to the show notes. I have a link to the forum thread on the MTG Cast forums that we basically just use for this. As I want you to post a picture there. It makes it easier for me to keep them all in one place so I can really give everybody a fair shake at this. And there's been some very interesting entries so far. So everybody who's entered so far, kudos on doing a good job. Last and not least, we talk about movie podcast. Here is the B-movie recommendation. I'm pretty sure Jack is just going to flip over in his chair, but we're going to be talking about Critters this week. So Critters is a classic. This is B-horror. If anybody hasn't seen Critters, these are these small... They don't quite look like gremlins. I think their faces look a little like gremlins. They're kind of round, kind of furry back little animals, maybe about the size of a basketball. But the front kind of look reptilian. They have big, sharp, pointy teeth. They can shoot little poisonous quills out of their back. In some ways, they're criminals. They were sequestered on a prison planet. They somehow got a ship and escaped. They get shot down by the space cops, whoever these people are, and they crash on Earth. And so they now go out, and when they eat is how they multiply. They kind of, if they eat, then they then poop out a little bit more balls, and you got more critters around. And these things are like, they're land piranhas. They will eat everything that can stand still. And they have some interesting defense mechanisms where they can roll up and roll around, roll down hills, shoot these little quills. And this is, the first one is B-horror at its best. The budget is minimal, but it's entertaining. There's these intergalactic bounty hunters, and it has a Billy Zane sighting, so if you're a Billy Zane fan, here you go. And also, somewhat oddly, is who becomes one of the main heroes? It's a person that appears to be developmentally challenged, which is also unique in a movie from that time. And also unique is this movie had spawned three sequels. You had Critters 2, the main course. And most importantly, we have Critters 3, You Are What They Eat. If anybody knows where I'm going with this, kudos to you. This is actually the first feature film appearance for now a major actor. This is Leonardo DiCaprio's first feature film appearances in Critters 3, You Are What They Eat, where a lot of ways critters have invaded kind of a skyscraper. There's also Critters 4. They're invading your space. Interestingly enough, Critters 3 and 4 are actually filmed back-to-back. I have no idea why Leonardo DiCaprio was only in the first one, not the second one. Probably because they take place in different areas. But they would have been smart to use the star power that they had to have Leo in all those pictures. And also, if you are a Sci-Fi Channel fan, they are the master of the made-for-TV movie. We talked about Mongolian Death Room before. Apparently, my TiVo, who, you know, they discover what you like, and it knows that I like really, really crappy B-horror movies and B-sci-fi movies. It said, Tom, I'm guessing you're going to like the movie coming on right after Mongolian Death Room called Sand Serpent, or Sand Serpents. The reason this is interesting is the Mongolian Death Worms looked a lot like the spikes from Magic. The Mongolian Death Worms looked like the spikes. The Sand Serpents look a lot like the Hellions from Magic. You have ones like Crater Hellion, Caldera Hellion, and they travel under the ground, they eat helicopters and people. It's cheesy, you know how it's going to end, but I love watching bad special effects. There's probably something wrong with me. So that is the end of our show. Sorry, the cat's going nuts here. I'm trying to beat it away from the microphone. That's the end of our show. Again, I appreciate sitting through a solo show. Oh, hopefully you can't hear that. There it is. So thank you for sitting through the show. Hopefully it wasn't too bad. Arch Enemy looks very exciting. If you almost excited as the Arch Deluxe or the McDLT. Connell will be back. Wish him luck in Pro Tour San Juan. We'll have the full crew back last time. We're recording this actually kind of a Monday evening time because that's when I was getting out of work. It's fun. I love bringing you the show every week. Trying to think how you could. There's really, you don't have to show us love. We love to get emails. That's as much as you need to do. Or we're doing fine otherwise. But if you do like us, you know, just share with them. You know, share with your other Magic players or your Magic play group or your local store. And if you want to give them a shout out, just give us an email. We're here to bring you the news, some strategy, just help the Magic community in general. We're just doing this for fun. So everybody, have a good night. Have some fun playing Magic this week. Save, put aside a $20 bill for an Arch Enemy deck in about a month or so. I mean, some of you probably already spent your money on some amazing games like Alan Wake or Mass Effect 2 or StarCraft 2. There's so much stuff coming out right now. I know money is tight. Get an Arch Enemy deck. Support these formats so we keep getting more. I'm going to stop talking. It was a fun episode. Send in the picture of your Magic card collection. Get a Gideon. Talk to you later. Bye.